Hello and welcome to episode number 373 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I'm your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Back again.
We are back. Back for one of our final regular shows of the year. We've got to squeeze this one in before we get to our best of. Little movie that has probably gone off most people's radars, as it did ours.
For us, we had to watch it before our 2023 year-end list was felt complete.
Yeah,
you know, we couldn't close the year off and not have this eligible for all award categories.
Yeah, it feels like it completes off almost like the last 3 or 4 years for us, really. which we'll get to when we're discussing Dark Harvest. But first, a little bit of news this week. Some nice little things here. Nice little announcements of things that I'm sure we'll be happy about. This first one comes off the back of pretty sizable success for Eli Roth with Thanksgiving at the box office. Movie didn't do like exceptionally well, but it did well, and it wasn't a huge budget, which is always good to see these companies know what sort of movie they're making. Which meant that it only had to make a decent amount of money, which it did do, and that was enough for a sequel to be greenlit. So yeah, Thanksgiving 2 will be hitting cinemas around Thanksgiving, not next year, but the year after, so 2025, which I think is great. The fact that they're not having to kind of squeeze one out for next year. Eli kind of posted a little video on Instagram, and he was just so excited, so giddy with excitement, talking about horror, talking about this film, talking about how they're gonna, you know, take a year off to really get a script together before they go into production. And I was just so happy for him. Like, I think we spoke at the time that we obviously loved the film. And I think I'd said, like, I really didn't want there to be a sequel because it felt so contained and every character felt like they played a part in that story. But just seeing his excitement with it all completely changed my mind, where I was like, I am so happy to see Eli so engaged and in love with the genre again. And as we discussed at the time, like, he's finally got his slasher franchise now. And I could easily see this being one that runs for multiple entries. So, like, it took a while to get there. And obviously, he's only ever revisited a movie once with Hostel. So I think it's really cool that he's kind of wanting to do that. And even if this just was like a trilogy, that would be super cool. You know, if that ended up being the case. But yeah, I'm just happy that he's back in the genre, back where he well truly belongs, and is happy making horror films again. But yeah, what do you make of Thanksgiving getting a sequel?
Yeah, I'm buzzed. I think the only thing that could have been better for this announcement would be Eli Roth is making a brand new slasher movie IP. But I don't even think like just a horror IP would be a better announcement for me, because I love slashers. So do you know what I mean? Like, this is almost as good as it could possibly be. And with something like Thanksgiving, I think it can be, you know, be interesting to see what he does with the sequel. You know, do we continue this story with these characters in this world, or do we have it more as the branding and switch things up? You know, I think it will be a continuation, but it will be interesting to see. But either way, like, I really love Thanksgiving. You know, slashers are my favorite subgenre in horror, and Eli Roth being back in horror and back this excited about horror since really his early days in the genre just gets me, you know, really pumped, because, you know, it's what we said about when we talked about Thanksgiving, that Eli Roth really should be a lot more prolific in the genre than what he has been. You know, he's been distracted and pulled away by so many different things and kind of, you know, in the background way more, and I love him most when he's in the director's chair. So, you know, I don't know whether it was clarified in the announcement whether he will be at the helm fully.
Yeah, he is. Yeah,
which is absolutely fantastic. So, you know, number one, Eli Roth directing a horror movie, great. The fact that it's also a slasher movie, great. And yeah, Thanksgiving was a really good movie, so why not give us more of them?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. I think it's just so cool, like I say, to see that he's back here. And I just, the more I think about it, the more I think, like, oh, no, it was a great one-off movie, but I really do think there is franchise potential there. Like, it already has a lot of the things of just such a strong killer in terms of the mask and the presentation that I want to see more of that. You know, I want to see slight variations on the mask and things like that. So, yeah, I'm so for this. But yeah, moving on, we have a release date for a movie, which was very much highly anticipated for both of us, which is, of course, the return of Robert Eggers, coming off the back of not one, but two back-to-back movie of the years for us, in The Lighthouse and The Northman. And obviously he's back with his take on Nosferatu. We're kind of getting a lot of teaser images we've had over the last month of this, of certain cast members, and we finally now got a release date, which I'm assuming is a trailer is going to follow shortly. This will be coming our way Christmas next year, so December 25th, 2024, which is already cool and exciting. But I was thinking, like, don't we already have another big movie coming out then? And I had to double check, but yeah, that's when Jordan Peele's new movie's out as well. So that's going to be interesting if that stays the way it is. I it's cool because, you know, we'll just see them both and love it, but it's from a personal standpoint, I want both these movies to do well. I also, Robert Eggers came off the back of his last movie not doing well, and Jordan Peele has been a completely proven box office draw, 3 movies in a row. You know, it doesn't matter who's in his films, people go see them. So yeah. I would be worried for Robert if this was a head-to-head battle on Christmas, let alone if there's anything else outside of the horror genre floating its way in as well, or depending on, we don't even know what Jordan's film is yet. But yeah, what do you make about this? I guess mostly like Nosferatu. We knew it was coming next year at some point, but yeah, it's coming on Christmas. And what how excited are you for the film?
That's the thing. I'm just super excited for the film, man. Like, you know, like you say, his last two movies, absolute bangers. You know, the whole vampire thing we've spoken about quite a lot in recent times, that I'm really like jiving with the genre and want there to be some really decent vampire movies. So having like a guy like this that not only I think can make a banging vampire movie, you know, he's just going to go like batshit crazy with the lore and level of detail to it and authenticity. You know, if he can do for vampires what he did for Vikings, then strap in, it's going to be fantastic. So yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, same. I'm really looking forward to this film. I've always thought that, like, you know, I want to see him do fresh stuff, but this was always the thing of, like, it felt like he had to do this. If there was ever a chance that he could do it, because it's been so, it has been this giant shadow looming over his whole career. This, like, old film that is so clearly the biggest inspiration on his entire filmography, and so it felt like a case of, yeah, if you can do this, we all need to see this exist. And I think you just know that this is going to be one of the most interesting and beautiful looking movies ever made. Like, I can't imagine how gorgeous every shot in this film is going to be. So yeah, I cannot wait. Now, next up, another announcement. This one only just got announced, actually, which this was more surprising based off, again, the big success of Saw X, you know, both critically and commercially for the first time in a very long time. They released a good Saw movie that was well received and people liked it, which was something that I didn't even think was possible at this point. And so rather unshockingly, seeing as they kept greenlighting sequels when the movies were terrible, it was only going to be a quick matter of time that they would announce a sequel based upon a good film. So yes, Saw 11 next year, September 27th, 2024, so almost exactly 1 year after this year's film. That's all we know right now, so we don't know anything about the film. My personal early speculation, at least one, would be, you know, what we talked about with that film, in that one of our biggest problems was that they do leave a lot unresolved. And that is now a benefit to this film, because this film needs to take place 1 second after Saw X ends. And ideally probably take place just that day. You know, this whole film probably should just take place the day after Saw 6. there's so much you can do there with Cecilia, whether it's her trying to track them down. Maybe she immediately gets hold of Amanda and it's a case of, you know, Hoffman and Jigsaw having to go and save Amanda from Cecilia or something. There's so many ways you can do this.
Hoffman, I forgot about Hoffman.
Yeah, like, oh, I didn't. Like, he needs to play a major component in this film, I think, especially if they do what I'm hoping. Or it might be a case of maybe she gets Jigsaw. So then you have, like, okay, can Amanda and Hoffman work together? I think with there being the trio...
Yeah,
hopefully an established trio in the next film. I really want to see one of those taken away, and it doesn't make sense to split up Hoffman, so it has to be one of the other two.
I think Jigsaw being vulnerable as well makes sense with you know, everything with Tobin Bell. You know, like, he doesn't have to be in it as heavily. He doesn't need to carry the movie having like Hoffman return as well. You know, it does
because of him talking to Cecilia that way as well.
Exactly. It does make me laugh, though, how it's taken them a decade to make a good Saw movie, and then they're going to force one out within 12 months. Classic Saw, classic Saw. But yeah, you know, you're right, though, that it's the only thing that they could possibly do is have this movie begin 1 second after the last movie ended, because they've got such a small window of story to tell, and so they butt heads with other things. And I thought they told that story in this one movie, but the way it ended abruptly, they can squeeze it in, you know, especially when we're seeing, you know, movies like, you know, Saw 4 that happens parallel to Saw 3, etc. You know, it can happen. But yeah, they have such a finite amount of time where these three killers are all eligible to be together that they have to take advantage of it, because we've realized that post Kramer, the Saw franchise does struggle, you know, to really have that hallmark of him in it. And, you know, then where we've been left, it would just get messy. It would have to, you know, there's got to be a huge jump in time if they're going to pick that up. And we've waited far too long for them to actually do that at this point.
Yeah, there's obviously like loads of different ways they could go with it, but I would just be stunned if it's anything other than what I've just outlined. Based upon that success, and then like you say, they have such a small amount of windows they can fit it in anyway. It's also a very Saw thing. Like, I think it's cool because it will feel like those old sequels, and they were always taking place straight after the last film. And so I would really like that to be the case. And if it is the case, then I'll just go completely blind on this film until it's out, because I don't need to know anything. Like, if they say, like, yep, we've got everyone back and it's set in that timeline, I'll be like, awesome. Like, because that is best case scenario for me. Like I say, I don't know how that works in terms of like constructing a big game and having, you know, like a trap every 20 minutes, because Saw, unfortunately, does have this formula that they are a slave to. Because I never think about Saw that way. I think about it from a story perspective, you know, and I think the idea of Cecilia getting her hands on either Amanda or John, and the other one along with Hoffman having to save them for our movie, works well from a storyteller perspective. But I don't know how that would work in terms of having a body count and traps every 20 minutes. I have no idea how that would work. So
yeah,
yeah, interesting, but very exciting, and I'm glad Saw's good again for now. And then lastly, this is just a very small update on a bunch of TV shows, really. It was nice to see that these TV shows that we love, that we're longing for, are at least going to be back. And this first one should be back hopefully soon, because I saw Don Mancini tweeting on the set of Chucky. So obviously season 3 part 2 has now started production in the last couple of weeks. Awesome to see them all on set having a great time as usual. And so yeah, hopefully we'll get that early next year. And then we've had other big updates, so that's probably the two big ones for us, really. Stranger Things is looking like to start production in January, of course, on the final season. And HBO has already confirmed that The Last of Us season 2 will start production in February. So we're getting these things, you know. It was a bit of, unfortunately, there was a massive issue this year, which has now resolved itself, thankfully. But we're getting these shows, you know, like those last two, we're not getting them next year. So we need to just forget about them. But they're pretty much both penciled in for 2025, which is going to be insane. But that's fine, because we have so many films to look forward to next year. that we'll get those when we get them. But Chucky, we should get very soon. So I'm hoping we get Chucky by like March at the latest, because that's such a quick turnaround. I think it should come by Feb, hopefully. But yeah, very exciting. Anything to say on those? Obviously, it's very exciting, but we just don't know. It's just nice to see these confirmations, because I did look like recently, and I've still heard jack shit about Lord of the Rings on Amazon. Like, I don't know if they've just forgotten that they own that IP.
That took them 4,000 years anyway, and like infinite money. So, like, let alone in this post world where they've got to actually pay people respectable amounts. You know, imagine what the budget's got to be now for Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I mean, Chucky just blows my mind, because it already feels like, yeah, Don's like, yeah, I'd probably get it out in Jan.
Yeah.
Like, I just love it. I love the fact that it seems like he can continue making it, and that he can get the episodes out quite quickly. You know, it's just great. Like, I love the 180 that Chucky managed to do with this season, where it's just got me so, it's got me to the highs of season one. You know, maybe even more with the extra lore that we've now got in there. But yeah, the other two, it's great. Like, I'm glad that we've got those announcements that we need. You know, the recent months have been painful. The Last of Us, I always knew would be a gap. Like, did I really expect production to start on Last of Us sooner, had the strikes not happened? Probably not. But, no, you know, with Stranger Things, we all know that time is not on their side. Mm. You know, could Bella Ramsey get a bit older to play Ellie in season two? Yeah, that would be pretty good. But, like, you know, do we want 11 to look, you know, 34 for the next season of Stranger Things? Well, you know, that could be a little bit jarring for potentially what the story they're going to do, you know, especially how the season ended. It feels, again, like that should pick up pretty quickly after the finale, and now we're like multiple years past it. We've you know, what are they gonna do? Like, you know, in prior seasons we've always had a bit of a time jump, and it's like, oh, okay, that 6 month, that 9 month time jump, oh, okay, they've aged 2 years, but we're gonna, you know, accept that. But if the jump is literally like days, you know, that's going to be difficult. And so I wonder if they're going to have to try to work a time jump to just make it make sense, or whether we're all just going to have to just go along with it. You know, I do worry a lot about Stranger Things and the way it will look. It's difficult. You know, I don't, you know, we all know that the actors are getting older, and it is what it is. But like, and it's, you know, but it is going to be difficult, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's so interesting with that show, but it's nice to see that it's at least starting production. And obviously, who knows how long that's going to take, and how we're eventually going to get that final season. But yeah, they do have that problem, and it is funny because The Last of Us, like you say, just doesn't have that problem. That whenever they would have started, it would have been more than fine. If they had to wait 2, 3, 4 years, it really wouldn't have made a difference on the story. And I'm with you. Like, I was always thinking, like, man, February seems like probably what they originally had penciled in. And I have to imagine, you know, that was in terms of getting the sets built and getting the everything else put together. Because, like, as I'd kind of jokingly said in jest on the show, like, man, I really don't think stuff like the writer's strike had any impact on that show, because you really do just have two people, one of which already wrote that goddamn story. So the idea that you can't tell him to stop thinking about a story he already created and how he might possibly adapt that into a TV show, I just find laughable. So yeah, I feel like Neil and Craig got that done very quickly after the strike was finished up. But yeah, like I say, it's exciting that these are all going into production. But yeah, I just want to know about Lord of the Rings, man. It's like, I was just looking again now, and it was like they started filming that back in 2022. So yeah, that should come hopefully next year. That'd be a nice one to have for 2024. But we'll have to wait and see on that one. But yeah, shall we talk about this week's film?
Let's do it.
Let's talk about Dark Harvest. So So yeah, this is a pretty hilarious one, actually, in terms of our history, I guess, of it on the show. I mean, why don't you explain it? Because it's a weird one.
Yeah, I mean, this was a movie that I threw into one of my upcoming horror lists. Certainly not this year's.
No.
Maybe last year's, possibly the year before.
Yeah.
And I threw it in for pure banter because it sounded hilarious from synopsis alone. And forgot about it for multiple years until last week you mentioned that the movie was coming out. And we absolutely had to see it.
Yeah, this was supposed to come out in 2021. That was like the first proper firm release date that it got. But I imagine that we probably heard about it before then, you know, probably when they announced it. So yeah, it's been a long time coming. But it is here now, and this to me was always fascinating. I think for you it was fascinating because of this hilarious kind of setup that we'll get to, which is funny. But for me, it was always the director. He's kind of, David Slade has kind of been attached to a few low key bangers throughout his career, with his debut movie, Hard Candy, which is an incredible thriller if people haven't seen it. He also did 30 Days of Night, which I know you're a fan of. He did a segment for Nightmare Cinema, which we covered for the show. He also did Bandersnatch. I think he did like some other TV show, didn't he? Yeah, he's done Breaking Bad, Hannibal, two episodes of Black Mirror. So yeah, he's done a lot of stuff. He's not one of those names that kind of immediately pops out as I know that guy, but when you delve deep into it, he's just done a lot of good stuff. So it's like, oh, he's making a proper horror movie. You know, he's dabbled in the genre before, so it's nice to see him return. But yeah, outside of that, I guess what the hell is this crazy movie about?
Who knows? It is funny though, because I remember like when I talked about this on the upcoming horror movies, and then you kind of was looking into it, and you're like, oh, this director, he's got chops. And then it was like, shit, this might actually be a movie. Because it really didn't feel like it from even now reading the synopsis. I'm like, nah, I didn't see this movie. Where, yeah, basically, a kind of Midwestern town has this annual ritual where a mythical creature called Sawtooth Jack rises from the cornfields, and it's basically a, I don't even know whether it's a cat and mouse, I don't even know what the game is, where basically Sawtooth Jack has to get to the town hall alive, and everyone else in the town has to stop him by killing him in any way possible. Have I lost anyone yet? But for some reason, the townspeople have elected the youth, you know, the seniors in high school, to all band together and seek out Sawtooth Jack and make sure he meets his demise before he gets to the town hall. I mean, does that not sound like a movie you want to watch? It's basically, and the winner, the kid that puts the final nail in Sawtooth's coffin, wins a brand new car, as as what you know would expect, and a one way ticket out of this town. Which, I mean, I gotta be honest, it seems pretty appealing because this town does seem quite awful.
Plus it's worth noting that this movie's set in the 60s. So I feel like that is like a ticket is way more desirable for them. Like, it's a big deal getting this like brand new crazy car.
Yeah, and kind of like we join the movie kind of in the final stages of the annual Sawtooth Jack reckoning, and kind of we get to see kind of him taking out and get to see this kind of aftermath of the winner getting this car and driving off into the sunset, and then we kind of cut to almost 1 year later in the kind of eve of this event happening again. And the reason why it kind of happens, that will quote unquote reason, is that if Sawtooth is defeated, then the town has a great harvest and all is well and everyone prospers. And in the years that Sawtooth isn't defeated in the correct manner, they have drought and the harvest is poor and everyone suffers. There's just so many little like parts of weird horror movie lore that's kind of thrown into this, and it's one where I kind of thought the movie would just be like, oh, there's this weird like killer that's in this like farm town, and that's what it is. But it's they throw so much lore at you with the town and this ritual and like the kids leading up to it. The kids leading up to the ritual are thrown out of their homes and are unfed for 24 hours. So by the time Sawtooth rises, all of the kids are ravenous and want his blood, quite literally. And yeah, they just throw so much at you in the way of lore that I couldn't help but kind of just chuckle at and really kind of try to jump in on it. Really does feel like an old-fashioned kind of just dumb horror movie, you know. Very very, you know, this movie is incredibly Pumpkinhead inspired, you know. I think obviously Sawtooth himself visually has a lot of nods, but just all throughout it, and a lot of kind of those sorts of kind of 80s monster slash kind of lore movies, you know, where it's kind of it doesn't take itself too seriously, but likewise it does take itself seriously, if you know what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. where it shouldn't, and it does poke fun at itself at times, but then it really does lean hard in the fact that there is a character called Sawtooth Jack that once a year has to be murdered, and not one character breaks from the importance and you know the need for that to happen. And as the movie kind of progresses, we start to get more and more into who is this Sawtooth and why does he need to get needlessly butchered every year, and kind of the lore behind him becomes, you know, more and more prevalent, and it very obvious where it was going to go from very early on in the movie, really. But likewise, it was still kind of fun to see it play out, and you know, we have kind of the sheriff character that is kind of this very small town, you know, Midwestern sheriff that is kind of gonna do whatever he can to make the town prosper, and you know, so many of the kind of elder townspeople are in it for the greater good. You know, they know that what they're doing is wrong, but they know that they need to do this to prosper, and they're going to do whatever it takes, you know, which is kind of very, you know, similar to a lot of horror movies. And the first movie that popped into my head was Hot Fuzz, that isn't even a horror movie. but yeah, you know, just kind of know what they need to do to make sure that the town prospers, and they'll do whatever it takes. You know, because at the beginning of the film, it was like, why are the kids got to kill Sawtooth? Why not just have, like, you know, all of the old farmers there with shotguns, and the second he comes? Because he, you know, he doesn't seem like he's that difficult to kill in the opening of the film either.
Yeah.
You know, so why let a load of, like, malnourished children deal with it?
Yeah, it seems like the more, it's just hard finding him. Once you find him, it's pretty much game over, as long as you just go for the attack.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I still didn't get right why they starved the kids for, like, a day. You know, I guess to make them want it more, but, like, I would want them to be, like, fit and healthy, not, you know, half starving.
But, you know, that's just me.
Who am I to argue with their logic, hey?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that don't make sense.
I mean, yeah. I mean, do you wanna unpack this movie? I mean, I think I've gone as far as I can with a synopsis for this weird ass movie.
Yeah, this is so bizarre. Like, it really is, and until you've seen it, it's really hard to get a sense of like what type of film this is. Because that was the, like, tonally is where I struggled with this movie quite a bit, where I was expecting something more ludicrous with that premise, with the opening, and seeing this, like, basically an alien walking around, you know, like, I when I'd heard Sawtooth Jack and he wreaks havoc on this town, I was thinking more of like a slasher vibes, of like, it's just a dude with a knife with a pumpkin on his head, but like, you immediately see that it's not that. It's way more of a creature from like a Stephen King book, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But then it is treated with such reverence, and like, it really is serious. And that is, I think, something that is very similar to like a Stephen King story, like in It, where everyone, you have this insane supernatural element, but everyone is just treating it like, yep, no, it is real, and now we just have to deal with whatever that this is, whatever this thing is. So it's getting used to that tone, took some doing, because I really was expecting more of a fun, like I say, like, there are times where it does remind me of like an 80s throwback, but then there are other times where I'm like, no, now it feels more like a modern drama, because it's really story-based, really character-driven, and I think that's the best moments. Like, I really liked a lot of the characters in this film, particularly our lead. I thought he was such an interesting character, and kind of really kept me going. His dynamic with both of his parents and the girl and all that stuff, and the bullies and the friends, it was just really good. I was like, man, this is just like a great story. And then you kind of remember, like, oh, yeah, there's this other weird supernatural horror thing going on as well. Because even being set in the 60s as well just kind of gives it this nice vibe to it, this more, like, grown-up vibe. I think it's something that we just don't generally see in horror films, so it's really nice to see a different setting. So that immediately gave this movie just a more interesting flavor that made it so much more enjoyable. I think when we get to, like, the run or whatever it's called, with Sawtooth on the loose, like, it was interesting how it did have this kind of vibe of almost like the Purge mixed with like a battle royale, where you have like all of these kids that are being forced to do this thing that they, that most of them don't want to do. Some of them do, you know, like the bad kids are like looking forward to it, and they're looking forward to wreaking havoc and maybe getting away with breaking other rules on that night, like they know they can, whereas there's some that just want to hide and don't want to participate. So there's that element, like a battle royale, but then obviously Purge with like all of the masks is very much looking like the Purge. You know, there's so much like creepy mask work going on throughout the whole film, which is very cool. That's kind of like how the movie opens. So it takes from a lot of different films and ends up with just this cool, interesting vibe. That, like, for the most part, I did really enjoy this film. It was just trying to get to the actual point of Sawtooth Jack was when the movie would always lose me, because it never really made any sense. And like I say, there's a few obvious kind of plot points that they're trying to get to, and the kind of, especially like the big one of kind of who Jack is and why it happens every year and stuff, it was annoying because you see it coming and then you realize like, oh well, that just means that this story is going to have a pretty unsatisfying conclusion unless they are able to break this kind of circle, you know, this you know, tradition, which they aren't really able to do. So that was annoying, but I don't know, it was weird. Yeah, like it was just a weird film where it had some really cool moments. Like there's a scene when the kids are like locked in the basement. It's just such a good scene where there's like, well, first you see like the guy who's kind of protecting his shop with his shotgun.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that was great as well.
Yeah, like that's super cool because again, that's very Purge like and just the way that goes down, and there's some good gore and violence in there. But then, yeah, for this kind of kid who's like, you know, let me in, and then there's like the people that are trapped in there that are like, oh, you know, he hasn't paid and he's turned up late, and then there's like the kids that feel innocent, so of course they let him in just as Sawtooth turns up and ends up killing absolutely everyone. So like scenes like that just work super well. And like I say, I really liked the main character. I actually really liked the dynamic with the parents and stuff. I think that was when the story was probably at its strongest, because I liked learning that guilt, that kind of collective guilt of what all the parents shared and kind of why they were able to all give up their children because of this, like you say, the greater good. That very much did remind me of Hot Fuzz in that moment as well, where they were just like being forced to do something that they didn't want to do, because they've bought into this town and this place, and that's just the rule. You have to do it whether you like it or not. So there was some really cool moments in there, but again, there's like, I was just thinking now, there's another weird character tonally. I think it's like the cop.
Yeah.
Who's just like really over the top, and he's quite hilarious actually, because he's just like shouting at everyone, and he's just like, he's proper like, I'm from an 80s horror film, and I'm chewing the scenery with every scene. And yeah. it's like, oh, that's cool, but but this is not the film you should be in, because the rest of this film is like a seriously set drama in the 60s. Like, that's what I'm getting from my lead and the romantic interest. Like, their stuff is like really grounded and serious, and then you'll occasionally just get this like throwaway character who's just acting like a maniac. So
it's like accent and like the way he looked was just so hilarious, where he was just like shoving his tongue into the side of his like door for the entire movie.
So it's like, it just ends up being a weird thing, and I think it makes sense why this got so many delays and switched around, because it just feels like a very incomplete film. That has some really cool moments in it. Like, overall, I like this way more than I thought I would. There's some really good shit in here, and there's some really good horror, some really good story. The fact that it does kind of mix a lot of these things I really like. You know, this whole town, kids brought together to take down this kind of mythical creature. Like, a lot of that stuff is just really strong. And like I say, in particular, what's that?
The movie's bizarre how it throws all these things together, and then just has, you know, because you look at the synopsis and it sounds batshit crazy, and this feels like it should be a dumb movie, and then you see the sheriff and it's like, oh yeah, this is just gonna be like a dumb movie, and then it has this real heart in it, because, you know, like the relationship for our lead character and the love interest, and the fact that, you know, that was way more taboo in the 60s, and like, you know, putting that into the movie feels really, you know, well done, how they did that. And then, you know, with the lead and the fact that, yeah, his brother was the winner last year, and so he had this pressure of entering, and then we get to see the life that they lead, and the fact that the parents are now rich and you know, in this kind of higher status in the community because their son won, and like, you know, how they feel about that and everything else. And it's just, yeah, it's way more multi-layered than what the synopsis of this movie should really be. You know, which is really surprising when you first delve into it.
Yeah. Like, looking at it now and seeing that this is based upon a novel, like, I wouldn't have thought that when I saw it, but it certainly makes more sense now in hindsight. Because that's always the case of when you have like really cool elements mixed with maybe not so other cool elements. And that is a case of like, is that an adaptation where they've pulled certain things and they've had to skip over certain things and try and make it into a movie at times? Like, it just ends up being a more difficult to watch film. It doesn't feel normal. It doesn't just feel like this was one person's vision that was created. It feels like there was a lot of different things cooking here, and a lot of them work, but they definitely weren't on the same page. Like, when you get characters like that sheriff, the inner silo work really well in a horror film. He was great fun. But like, him being in this film when it has so much serious drama going on as well, and like, when you're dealing with the collective grief of the parents, and like, that element would be enough for me normally. Like, I think that could have been really, should have been what this film was about, really. It should have been about his brother winning and then leaving, and him uncovering what that meant. And that is what you get for the most part. But then there's just a whole lot of other stuff. You know, but like, that would have been a strong enough to kind of see the unraveling of his parents, what with this love interest, the taboo nature of it, and him trying to realize, like, okay, this game isn't my ticket out of here, but I still want to get the fuck out of here, and how the hell do I do that? Like, I think that would have been really cool. So it was almost there, but I still actually really liked this movie. It really surprised me. What did you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the you know, the things that you touched upon, the kind of dynamic of all the children, and how some of them really want to attack Sawtooth, some of them want to cause a bit of chaos, some of them go into hiding, you know. And there was one scene in particular with like a kid that was being bullied, and they were like, you know, what are you gonna do, you're not gonna win, and like, having a go at him, and he just like wrecks the person and just straight up murders them. And I was like, oh shit, yeah, like, that's when I realized that like, all bets are off. Like, you know, that during this phase, we are in like a mini purge situation, and that's fun, where it's like, yeah, maybe the kids are all going to start killing each other because they want to win. And if there's no competition, then they'll be able to win. And there's this, you know, when they see Sawtooth, there's this trepidation, is like, do I charge in or do I stop other people from charging in, or do I wait to deliver the final blow? And, you know, and even when we got to like the kind of end of the night, it was interesting how that panned out, that like, you know, one person thought they were going to get the win, and then ultimately that's not what happened. And I thought, like, even that was like, oh yeah, like, you know, it's really the last person to put that knife in and twist it is the one that gets the W and gets the love and the admiration of the town. And I really enjoyed that dynamic. I think the bit that is probably the most disappointing for me was once we knew, or once you could see the writing on the wall as to kind of who Sawtooth was and what happens kind of annually, I kind of still wanted like a Genesis. I wanted like an elder of the town to be like, well, yeah, back in day one, this is kind of the spark that caused Sawtooth, you know. And I kind of wanted that as to just this being tradition, because in a story that takes itself so seriously and has a lot of lore, I find my one of the biggest criticisms of me wanting more lore, which is strange, but I did, because it did get me invested. But yeah, overall, I don't want to be too critical, because I think this movie delivers way more than what it should. I think it had some good kills. It was fun. It had a charm to it. It made me feel like it was a throwback in tone and with the setting itself. You know, as you said, the 60s setting felt nice and fresh, and was just fun to see kind of kids looking that way in this scenario. You know, I think especially kind of Midwestern kind of, you know, 1960s America, and kind of, you know, the fact that they then tackled some of the race issues and that sort of thing, I think is like interesting that the movie even, you know, attempted to do something like that. And yeah, overall hit way more than it missed, which, yeah, like I said, just, I thought this movie was just going to be a dumb movie that we might be able to get some laughs of just because of like our context to it. And the fact that it actually turned out to be like a pretty interesting movie was fun. You know, was it an absolute banger? No. Was it weird as shit and pretty enjoyable? Yeah. You know, and that's what I kind of got out of it, really. I think you know, with the director involved, it shouldn't be surprising that the movie is as well made as what it was, but it really did kind of just it always, you know, didn't take the piss out of itself, which I think a movie like this could easily do. And I think that's what it kind of stayed true to, as it knew its rules, and then it kind of kept it serious and grounded, which then made the movie enjoyable throughout. And so, yeah, I had a good time with it. Really surprisingly good time with it.
Yeah, I was surprised because, yeah, I was just expecting more of like a low-rent type film. You know, with that synopsis, I really thought it would just be like a body count type slasher movie or something like that.
What I was expecting.
Yeah, I did not expect any sort of substance of issues or character development or of level of drama, because this movie has just disappeared, really. Like it's really fallen through the cracks, and that's partly due to, I think it was the production companies folded, because it was like an MGM movie and it's the final one they've distributed following the formation of Amazon MGM Studios distribution. So it's kind of just one of those things that when certain studios, you know, join up, there's just one of those ones that just completely falls off the slate, because it deserved something better than what it got of just being put out on demand. You know, I think any streaming service or anything, or like this could have easily got a small theatrical release, I think, as well. Especially with it having that nice little built-in Halloween theme in there, you know, this could have easily been a nice one to kind of put out there around this time, even though of course that's a busy time in the cinema for horror, but like certainly a streamer could have got behind this one, I think. Because it just coming out in October, and like I say, no, pretty much no one's seen or heard of it other than us, and it's like, it is weird given that this director's done big films that have either got theatrical releases, you know, like 30 Days of Night, or he's had big streamers involved behind him, like the Bandersnatch and stuff. And there's a couple of notable people in here. You know, you got a Lost cast member in this film, for Christ's sake, like, which is always a joy. I love Jeremy Davis as well. He's so awesome, and he's so good in this. So yeah, I just
can't take him seriously.
He's so good.
I really struggle.
Once you just embrace it, which I have for so long, he's so good. Like because I saw him in another film recently as well, and he's just fantastic. I love him. He looks so different in this one though. Like, I almost didn't recognize him.
Yeah, I at the beginning I was like, "Hang on, is that?" And then he kind of mouth breathed smoke, and I was like, "Oh yeah,
it's so good." I was actually just looking that he's in a movie where he played Charles Manson. Called Helter Skelter in 2004.
I've seen that.
Have you seen that?
I'm pretty sure I've seen that.
Yeah, because I'm like, I've heard of this. So it's a 2004 TV film, which, yeah, must have been based upon the book. Yeah, I can see that it's his art. God, I need to watch this. Because, yeah, he plays Manson. I just can't imagine Manson with that sort of breathe acting, but yeah, that's exciting. Yeah,
God, I do remember, like, I've seen this movie, but I remember very little about it.
I might have to just watch a trailer or something. I do want to see that.
I need to watch all 2 hours and 16 minutes of it.
Just saw the runtime. Yeah. Christ. Yeah, it was a two-parter, I think, TV film.
Oh, yeah, because it, yeah.
That's mad.
Yeah, Christ.
But yeah, that's a great way
that's
to end
a tangent.
It. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, what would be your recommendation of Dark Harvest?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me of Helter Skelter. But yeah, Dark Harvest. Yeah, I mean, I think this is one that, like, if you can see it, because it's not the easiest thing to be able to see, I think you should give it a go, because if you just like a weird horror movie that, you know, there isn't that much like it. The closest comparison is Pumpkinhead. That is just this weird little movie that's got this, you know, interesting lore. It's got a lot of well thought out characters. There's not a lot of kind of poor. I think the sheriff character is the only, like, consistently, like, out of place thing in this movie, and everything else is pretty solid. And yeah, and even him, I still had fun with him. Like, I feel like we've kind of slagged him off a bit. And
no,
he feels a bit out of place.
Yeah.
Like, he is actually fun, and
he's,
like,
really fun.
Most of the scenes he was in, like, I had a good time, because he is just so stupid and just so over the top. And when he's just, like, screaming and, like, just like in the middle of the town, just like driving through, like, causing chaos and that. And so, yeah, overall, I'd recommend it. I had a good time with this.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. Like, I'm edging towards recommendation just because I really liked it, and I think that it's good enough on that merit for people to watch it. Another thing worth saying is, like, it really respects your time as well. Like, it really just, you know, gets going immediately, is right in the last year's game, then you pick up immediately after it, and then I couldn't believe how quickly we were in the game again. Like, there's no build up to the second one, and then kind of you feel like you're in the finale, like, instantly. Like, it's just crazy how quickly this movie, you know, goes, and it's a relatively short film as well. So yeah, for that reason I would recommend it. It's difficult to get hold of, so it's a shame that it's not, you know, on a platform or something, but I think this is one of those cases that it's pretty cheap enough to just go out your way and have a good time to watch it. So yeah, I would recommend it as well. Yeah, that was our discussion of Dark Harvest. I will take a quick break and we will be right back. So yeah, that is it for another week. Another film in the bag. And yeah, now we just got the big one to look forward to.
Say, another year in the bag.
I know, it's crazy. 2023. What a strange year it has been. Like, it's just, that's all I can think to describe it. I really am going to have to kind of look back on the year in the next couple of weeks, especially from just an overall film perspective, because you know, we've talked about it a lot on the show, and it being a weaker year, which it definitely has been, and we'll obviously get to that in depth on the next show. But like, it just, movies this year have been weird. It feels like there's just been this distinct lack of big releases throughout the whole year. You know, I'll have to look up kind of like what were the biggest movies of the year, because there's only been a few of those moments where there was like the Barbie or Oppenheimer thing that was, you know, massive. You know, two of the biggest movies of the year. I think Barbie is the biggest film of the year. And like the Mario Bros. Film, which was awesome. And we had like Mission Impossible, and John Wick, but like there really wasn't much of anything. You know, and I think Marvel having such a shit year.
I was gonna say, I think that's huge. You know, I think in recent years we've had Star Wars being in the cinema consistently. We've had Marvel getting to like unprecedented theatrical heights, and like both, you know, no Star Wars movie. Marvel has really just fizzled out, and then it's almost like a huge global event happened a couple of years ago, and the production cycle of the movies is now kind of showing that, you know, we had the backlog, the movies that are in the can. And then it's like, you know, I wonder if this is the sign of like that kind of weird spell. And then hopefully we get back on it.
It was weird though, because we had 3 or 4 Marvel films this year. I think it was 4. And I think we've only got one.
Yes, you're stuck.
Yeah, so, but we've got one next year. So it's kind of like, even if that's really good, and hopefully it is because it's Deadpool, but even if it is, that's still just one film. And so I just wonder, like, obviously we're going to hopefully get Mission Impossible to kind of conclude that, and if that's anywhere near as good as this year's, then that'll be one of the best films of the year. But I just don't know where these big films are going to come from, because I don't think Quentin is going to be ready for his final film next year. We're not going to get a Christopher Nolan movie. I don't see what the big films are going to be next year. Because there's no Star Wars. It's a strange one. That like film just is in a weird place right now, and TV has done so well. Video games are just on like another level right now, you know, coming off of this year, which is like an all-time year for video games. And now we just had like the first year announcement for what is going to be the biggest entertainment release of all time, and that happens to be a video game. Like, video games just feel like they're going to steamroll into 2024 and then into 2025. So I do start to worry about like the long-term future of film and whether this is just the COVID catching up, because like it rebounded greatly cinema, and then this year happened.
Yeah,
and this, you know, year feels, I think, like what should have happened in 2021 and 2022.
I think that's the thing, because we had the backlog and stuff, you know. But I think as well, you know, there was a time where we said during this podcast that the TV shows are struggling and there's nothing on the horizon, and we'd be like, well, we're looking forward to Stranger Things, and that's about it, you know. And then suddenly now that's boomed, you know. And I remember when this current gen of consoles came out, and it was like, man, video game production is obscenely expensive, so expensive, and takes so long. Like, how is it going to continue in the way it is? And then it's at the heights, you know, you just described. And it's like, you know, the life finds a way, as John Hammond once said. You know, and I think, you know, movies are the same, that it's just, you have these cycles, and you know, and I think in particular with cinema, when you look at, you know, with Marvel at the height it was, and the fact that, you know, we had these, you know, fucking Disney putting out Star Wars movies as well, like that was just an obscene time, and then the fact that like when that was happening, we were getting these movies like bloody Fast and the Furious that were like making $1 billion and stuff like that. And there was that one year, wasn't there, when there was like half a dozen movies that made $1 billion.
Yeah.
And it was just like, that was just mental. And I just think like, we, you know, it needed to calm down again, and we're in that calm spell again.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think, like I say, it does come in waves. And this is just, I guess, a slow time. I was just looking out the top 10, I guess, of films this year, and yeah, it's crazy that like a movie like Ant-Man, which, you know, underperformed, is in the top 10. That's the 10th film of the year for $476 million.
I was like, did I watch Ant-Man? I'm like, oh, I did watch Ant-Man.
Yeah, like that massively underperformed. Elemental was a Disney flop that underperformed. That's in the top 10. Like Little Mermaid probably didn't do well as their projections. That's in the top 10. you know, it's really like, I think there's only really three movies it did phenomenally well, which is the three I mentioned. And yeah, Barbie is number one, just 50 million ahead of Mario, which pains me. I would have loved to live in a world where Mario was the number one film of the year. And Oppenheimer, like, ended up on 950. I really didn't think it was that close to a bill, which is nice to see.
That's wild. Nolan made that sort of bank.
Yeah, it's great. And yeah, I was just looking, like, what was the highest horror, but I guess it's no surprise. I just remembered, obviously, that huge hit in Five Nights at Freddy's.
Let's not talk about horror box office.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff that we didn't enjoy. The Marvel's making 200 million. That's hilarious. Yeah, that's it. That's it for the year. What a year.
Two in one. We'll see you next year. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, we got an excuse to talk about one of our favorite TV shows ever next week.
This is true.
Because we joked about it at the time, but now we actually get to give it every award next week. So that's fun.
I mean, if you're tuning in next week for us to talk about movies, I wouldn't bother. spoiler alert, TV will get mentioned quite a bit.
Yes, it will. But yeah, for now, that was episode 373. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone.
I never could, and how could I start now? Honey, I'm down, not that I need ya. Look at me now.